Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Welcome to our summer sesh. A few things before we dive in to the literary goodness of dandelion wine today.
Summer wine diving.
Yes. I mean, that's all you need.
Yeah.
So we are Catholic, but you don't have to be. We try to tie random things into that now and then.
Yeah.
Sometimes that leads us into heretical or blasphemical directions.
Blasphemical. I like it.
But, you know, we don't mean it, except when we do.
Yeah.
And we also swear, use adult language, or are just generally a little bit grown up to listen to. So,
a couple of fucking potty mouths.
You've been warned.
Yeah.
But you're welcome to be here, and we're glad you are listening along. I am Dizzy, joined as always by Guess. And guess what are you sipping?
I am drinking a Lagunitas Something Easy Ale.
Oh my gosh.
Because for me, this is going to be an easy episode of Church Drunk. Because today we're talking about a book that I haven't read.
Right.
So I'm just going to kick my feet up.
Should I feel?
Enjoy the ride.
Yeah. I mean, summer sesh for you. Just ask questions.
Yeah.
So. I mean, for me, I don't think that's too difficult because this is a summer reading list. We picked books we really like.
Yeah.
And today it's Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury.
So what are you drinking in honor of today's podcast?
Well, let's pretend, magical, fantastical, pretend time here on Church Drunk that I'm drinking Dandelion Wine itself because it's a real drink.
Right.
But it takes like 6 months to make, so
we did look up how to make Dandelion Wine and we were like, ooh, that's not gonna happen.
But the internets tell me that pretty much people would put, like, the dandelion petals in, like, citrus fruit and ferment it and make a wine.
Mm-hmm.
So in honor of that, I have some citrusy concoction here.
We went back to the well of the elderflower lemonade.
Yep.
Elderflower and rose lemonade.
Which are, like, flowers and citrus fruits.
Yeah. And
but I think if you wanted to drink along with us, you could really just put any hard alcohol with some citrus and call it dandelion wine.
Yeah, go find, take a bottle of rosé, put a flower in it, and there's your dandelion wine.
Yeah, get some of those edible petals, be all fancy.
Doesn't even have to be edible. Just try, do your research, try to make sure it's not poisonous, but just try to make sure.
If you poison yourself, it's not our fault.
Yeah, there is no try. Do or do not.
Wow. I love Star Wars, but today we're not talking that kind of sci-fi.
But we do have a sci-fi author.
Yeah, so Ray Bradbury, who is, I guess he does qualify. I mean, he is a sci-fi author.
Yeah, absolutely, he
but
is, which is
not,
why this is a fascinating kind of podcast for me, because I know nothing about the book. I know about Ray Bradbury. I've read a bit of Bradbury, but like the idea that he would write a book called Dandelion Wine is interesting to me.
Yeah, so he had this kind of thing that he did in a few books where it was, like, from his childhood memories that he then, like, spins in weird ways.
Okay.
So this is, like, his own sort of indulgent imaginings. And Dandelion Wine is one of these. I think it's his first one. So it's not quite autobiographical, but he's definitely pulling from his childhood experience.
Okay.
So it's set in, like, the 20s in, like, the Midwest, I guess. I don't even know exactly where it's, like, in the U.S., but 1927 is the year of the book, and it's published in the 50s. So it's kind of funny to me because it's, like, you know, we look at the 50s as sort of, like, this idyllic time.
Right.
But he is looking back at an even more idyllic time.
Right. Well, I mean, that would be, like, just prior to the Great Depression and stuff like that. So it's kind of, like, the very end of those golden years of the Roaring 20s and whatnot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I guess before we go any further, as always, little spoiler alert, I'm going to be asking Dizzy lots of questions about the book because I, as we said, never read it. I need to figure out why she likes it.
Yeah.
Why is it on our Church Drunk Summer Reading List? So if you've never read the book and you don't want to know anything about it before you read it, then go read it now.
I love
before
that
you listen.
We're spoiler alerting a book that was published in 1957.
Yeah, like, totally. Yeah.
I mean, but it's true. Probably a lot of people haven't maybe read it.
Right. Well, it's, I mean, Fahrenheit 451 is your classic Ray Bradbury book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most people have probably read that. Forced by some sort of, you know, awful English teacher. Actually, if you're reading Fahrenheit 451, hopefully it's not an awful English teacher that's making you do it. Hopefully it's someone
really
who's going to help
teacher.
You appreciate and enjoy. Because it is a great read. And actually, HBO just made a movie out of, like, it's available only on the HBO network, I guess, okay. of Fahrenheit 451.
I mean, sure. Let's shout out for Fahrenheit 451 for Ray Bradbury's dead sake. But, like...
Right. But, like, this is not
this
that.
This is not about that. Yeah, this no, is not that this at is, all. It is not that at all. Yeah, it's a really different kind of book. And the reason I liked it for summer is because it's about summer. Like, the whole book is okay. a summer.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's so the whole book takes place over the course of one
yes.
summer.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. And it is set in 1927,
28? Yeah, late
20s. And
in a small town. I would say Midwest.
Much yeah. later in the 50s. Okay. Right. So tell me about why the story is something that you thought, why do you enjoy the story? Why do you like it?
Yeah, so I like it because I think it's like a good summer read because it's all about summer. So and so sensory, like Ray Bradbury is very descriptive. Yeah. Like you feel summer, like you know, like what the heat feels like when you open that door, you feel the summer air. Like, so that's kind of cool for me. But also for why I like it for Church Drunk is it does get like a bit mystical and okay. he's definitely dealing with like big life questions.
Okay.
Through sort of the angst of the growing up of this little boy.
Who is the boy? Does he have a name?
Yes. So the boy is Douglas Spalding.
Douglas Spalding.
And he is meant to be, like I said, like loosely autobiographical okay. for Bradbury. So he's looking back and kind of with his adult spin on things. So Douglas has a little brother named Tom. So it's kind of Douglas and Tom. But then there are like tangent stories that kind of break off. But they're the main characters and it's their summer. It's Douglas's summer. And it kind of opens with him waking up in his grandparents' house, which is next door to his house, in like the up attic room that he only gets to sleep in once in a while and like has this whole view of the towns. Like they kind of lay out the whole summer and the whole town at the start.
Okay. Can and I then, tell you right now, right
yeah,
off the bat?
Yeah.
When you say Douglas Spalding to me.
Yes.
I really am having trouble breaking out of Spalding from Castaway. So I'm like, wait, where?
I don't have this issue, so I'm sorry.
On the deserted island is this little volleyball
okay,
man living?
No. Spalding! This is 1927.
Spalding, I'm sorry.
Let's just call him Doug.
Okay, Doug, that helps. Okay, that helps.
So young Doug, who okay. lives in this idyllic place.
Okay.
And yet is not immune from, like, the heartbreak of life.
Okay.
So this is one of those books where it's all just sensory and telling a story, and all of a sudden you're like kind of sucker punched by like the emotion of life.
Gotcha.
So, you know, my warning for everybody would be like, big feelings lie dormant in Dandelion Wine. All like, right. be careful because it's like this intergenerational family, and like they make nothing a big deal, and then it's like this huge, like, realization, and mm-hmm. we all can look back at times in our life when you have that
yeah.
realization of like the depth and the beauty of something. It's like beautiful and heartbreaking and loving at once. It's like, and that's a summer feeling to me, like yeah. oh, the days are going by.
Yeah,
you know.
How old is Doug?
He's like 10.
Okay.
He's a little guy, but it's the 20s, so like not- Douglas has like his own like life, like right. in that time period, like this kid like does whatever the so fuck kids do.
Like it's in a way.
Mom's not driving Douglas
story,
to camp.
Is this like a coming of age kind of a
it
deal?
It is, but he's not arriving there. Like it's okay. just a summer. It's like yeah. him having some grown up realizations, and with the way that a kid would, where like he's seen some tragedy and doesn't even realize the depth of it yet.
So he's starting, like, the light bulbs are starting to go off
right.
for, like, what
yeah.
the first few, like, the first decade of yes. his life basically mm-hmm. has had for him.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And he does have some of his own. And I do like books in general, like, especially, like, young adult books that are about kids not being stupid kids.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's, like, a full person.
Yeah.
And just at this point in his life.
Mm-hmm. So what, like, when we were sitting down to draw up our plans for the Church Drunk summer reading list.
Right.
Like, this book comes to mind because it takes place over the course of a summer.
Yeah.
But also, like, I mean, something else has to draw you to this book.
Totally.
Right?
So for me personally, Dandelion Wine is kind of a nostalgic summer book. I think I read it on, like, a reading list before 9th grade.
Okay.
So I've read this book a long time ago. And it's a book that it's an easy read. So yeah. you could pick this book up and read it in an afternoon. It's a quick summer read, and it's also like very nostalgic of summer. Mm-hmm. So like, even though I'm not from the Midwest, I can like feel the summery feel, like vibe of it, the sensory aspects. So I like that for mm-hmm. a summer reading list, but also it deals with a lot of kind of church drunky themes that we might like. So it's got some whimsy and some like fantastical nature to it.
Yeah, you mentioned that. So like, so Doug is hanging out with his family in small town America.
And all the different characters in the town. Okay. Yeah, so like Doug, okay, so Doug has his big sort of realization that like he's alive. And then there's the, like, heart drop of, that means you're going to die. So, like, Doug kind of has, like, that's, like, kind of the Bradbury sucker punch. Right. I feel that happens a lot, where it's, like, this high and then the, like, that also means this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
the balance of it. So, like, there's that kind of stuff happening, which is kind of coming of age-ish. I like it, too, because each character is really treated with, like, a full treatments, like a full, like they're given the full gift of personhood.
Okay.
No matter what age they are. And we're talking like little 10-year-old Douglas all the way to like 90-year-old great grandma or other neighbors.
Fair enough.
And like people have real passions in their lives, regardless of their age and sort of the heartbreak of that. So yeah. It's like a very life book. And I feel like yeah. that's summer. Like everything's totally alive and you don't want to think about winter, but it's always, you know, hanging off the edge of the view. It's so right
is,
there.
This is tapping it's into right your George R.R. Martin.
Oh, winter God. Is coming. Winter is coming. Of, it totally mentality. Feels that way. But look how beautiful summer is. So it's definitely this balance of like be in the moment. And that's the spirituality, I think, of Dandelion Wine.
Okay.
Like fully embrace the moment. Look at the beauty. The characters realize the beauty and like what's really important. But they also have the little foreshadowing, the little edge. That hard edge that makes the good stuff sweet, yeah, I guess, you know?
Interesting.
The side stories are really fun. Yeah. And one of them that is kind of, I guess, more on the spiritual side is, like, what happens after death? And, like, do people come back around again? There's, like, kind of this spring, winter, what do they call the old romances? Like an old person, a young person? May December romance.
May December, there you go.
But it's not a physical
I would not have been able to come up with that for the record.
Just have, like,
your face
was helping me.
May December.
So there's like all kinds of weird stuff, but it has such heart and there is a bit of a spiritual nature of us as like spiritual beings, you know, going through life and
so can
the minutiae of life.
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah.
Does little Douglas Spaulding or any of his volleyball friends.
Let's just call him Doug.
Go to the community pool and pretend to drown so as to make out with Wendy Peppercorn, the lifeguard. Because even though that's from a totally different era, when you talk about something that takes place over the course of one summer, my mind goes to Sandlot. You're talking about all the peripheral characters.
Oh my gosh, you just want to talk about Sandlot.
And I am just imagining Squints.
So.
making out with Wendy Peppercorn and getting thrown out of the community
Spalding,
pool.
Little Doug. He's a little too young. Hmm. Like, girls are still not something he would even be on his radar quite yet because he's that great age where little boys are not yet hormonal assholes.
Right.
He's 10. He's he's like a little kid, but like who can think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
in Catholic speak, he's reached the age of reason.
Okay.
But has not, committed any big sins yet.
In defense of the Sandlot, I feel like Squints, I guess maybe you give him 12 tops, but like he was probably around 10 when Wendy Peppercorn caught his eye.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, little Doug does ride his bike with the same impunity of the children of the Sandlot.
Okay.
There is a ravine which scary shit happens in.
Well,
for real.
Only scary shit happens
in
ravines.
Yeah, it's called a ravine.
I'm not surprised.
Oh my God. And people like walk around it constantly. It's very strange. Like there's a dark element.
Yeah.
Like, Dandelion Wine is beautiful in summary and childhood, but if you don't think childhood is scary as fuck, you need to rethink about your childhood.
It kind of makes sense in that, like, you know, Bradbury is, at his core, like a sci-fi writer. And so the things that would capture your imagination when you're a little kid that are, like, things to be scared of would take on that much more of a personality when employed by someone who writes science fiction, right?
Yeah, and I think this is not, like, I would not say this is a science fiction book. So I think it's off-brand,
but
perhaps.
There's
the little
fantastical
element. Yes, there's this fantastical element that runs through lots of different characters, and you do, like, meet people in the town. Like, you kind of get this broad view of these different people. So there is that aspect. And there's a big theme of happiness. And what is real happiness?
Is the overarching theme that, is this kind of a Stephen King sort of scenario where there's, like, something sinister going on? Or is this, like, really just a little slice of Americana other sort of elements come in?
It's sinister in the way that everybody's life is sinister.
Okay.
Like, it's being real about it. That can be
pretty fucking sinister, for the record.
It sure can.
Okay.
So, but it's not setting you up at all. It's almost, probably if there's a criticism, it might be, like, too earnest all the time. All
right.
It is not, it's very earnest, and it's very sweet, but it's also very real, which is why I like it. And I think a lot of people have liked it probably it has a poetical nature to it.
He is a great
writer. And it's like unapologetically beautiful. He's really like, it's all heart in this book.
Okay.
And there's stuff where you're like, no little person, like little kid would say that, or like, no people would talk like this, but it's like the stuff that you actually feel in your heart.
Yeah.
They say it kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So it's not like syrupy. But it's very earnest. I will give it that. But I think if you were writing in 1957 about 1927, like, you get to be super earnest.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting.
So if you could take it. So if you need a little refresh, if you need like a little refreshment or a little like break from our level of sarcasm, like there's nothing sarcastic.
Yeah.
But there is wit and there is like smiling through the tears kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, well, I don't know.
Like, imagine if, you know, 25 years from now, we write a book about how great it was to live before Trump was president, you know, before all the badness really started.
Well, I think it'd almost be like, you know, people of a certain age who could write about just before the smartphones. Like, what this feels like.
All right.
Just, like, you know,
well, that's right,
the last generation who, like, I rode my bike places.
Right.
Like, my mom didn't make me go to camp every fucking day of summer. Like, you know what I mean? Like, totally. These are, like, unscripted kind of childhood things. Because
from late 20s, you would go Great Depression, then World War II, and then he writes his book. You know, like, it's kind of like in the aftermath of this really dark period.
Yes.
And
he's not, like, sugarcoating it. Yeah. It's just a little break.
Maybe. There you go.
So I like it, and I think it's worth reading or listening to. It's a good audio book as well.
It sounds fantastic. Okay. So,
have I convinced you? Like, that should be a question of this. Like, would you read
Dan Absolutely.
I would based on my assessment?
I mean, it sounds like a great book about a lonely volleyball who falls in love with the community pool lifeguard.
And almost gets raped in a ravine.
Then strange things happen in a ravine. Yeah. Like, I'm in. Yeah.
And I haven't even told you forgot the May December romance.
And well, yeah, falls in love with a much older community pool lifeguard. Which one of Peppercorn kind of is.
So everybody should definitely check out Dandelion Wine for all of those reasons.
Yeah.
You know, when I revisited it right before this, I thought, oh, I don't know if this is like enough for it, but I think it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like
this is like if you tried to go read one of the other books, like if Shavon was just too much for you, go read Dandelion Wine.
I was actually going to say, it almost sounds like the polar opposite. Like the pendulum has swung so far from where we were last week with Good Omens, where it was like this really just over the top story.
Right.
This is the story that is like at the heart of everyone, but maybe with some of those more mystical elements or like kind of amplified.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's a slower pace too.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, I debated, like, and I think we debated, like, wait, do you pick one that I have to read or do I get to interview about it? So certainly, since we decided that I wouldn't read it beforehand, I will be reading Dandelion Wine.
Well, I can't wait to hear what you think.
Perhaps I'll blog about it when it's done.
Oh, please do. So if you want to read Guess's words on that, you can go to and you can find the whole summer list at churchdrunk.com.
Yes, churchdrunk.com is where we record everything on the blog. And where you can hit us up with comments, things like that. And we will also be open to any suggestions that you guys have.
Yeah.
If you want to email us or hit us up on Twitter about what books you want to hear about or any big questions that you have for us.
If you totally disagree with us, I'd like to hear that too.
Let us know. And speaking of big questions, it's time to dig into our summer big question
random box. Question box. Well,
pull
this one jumped out at me.
Okay.
It leapt right out of the box.
It leapt.
It leapt.
Like a gazelle on the Serengeti.
Wow.
Of the book of Song of Solomon.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, there's another one of mine.
This is you.
Yeah.
If you were made Pope for a day,
mm.
which I'm not eligible for.
No.
what
the
changes.
The Holy Spirit can choose anyone.
Any baptized.
If the College
it says boy.
Of Cardinals all were to write down Dizzy from Church Drunk on their little white slip.
Oh my gosh, please
and
do.
You were
tell
to
your cardinal.
Win the next thing. I mean, God forbid, because we want Frankie to stick around as long as we can.
Also,
but,
yeah. I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
It's like I am almost Pope at the moment. Okay, I'll finish reading the question.
If you were made Pope for a day.
If you were made Pope for a day, what changes, if any, would you make to Mother Church?
Yes.
Okay.
So, if you were made Pope for a day.
That's like a big open.
What changes? I know, and that's plural. And
actually,
you can make changes.
You know what, though?
Changes.
Yeah.
You don't have to limit yourself to one.
Look how high and happy you are just feeling the dandelion wine vibe. Mm. This is exactly what the book makes you feel like.
Nice.
Just singing songs.
I like it.
All right, so I feel like this is actually a question that all Catholics think about all the time.
Yeah, it's definitely
like
one
if
that,
you
like,
stay Catholic.
Every youth group tackles this like consistently. You know, if you're there on Wednesday night at your local church, they're probably talking about something like this. And I think it is. It's an inherently angsty question for an inherently angsty church because the hierarchy inevitably leads to like. Now, if I was in charge, I would be doing blah, 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 you know?
Right. And it's the kind of question where it's like, well, if you think that it needs to be changed, why are you still there?
Exactly. And
that's
definitely a whole
I see
section.
Through this little easy question
right?
guess.
Well, but you don't want to be one of them, do you? Like, I certainly don't want to join with the legion of folks that are like, well, there are no changes necessary to make
right.
church.
No.
You know?
And So I think... I think part of the answer is the answer that I tell myself all the time, which is I do believe the church is guided by the Holy Spirit, and I believe that she is old and she moves slowly, but she does move.
Yeah.
And that's my safety. But actual changes, like if I wished it could just
like I kind
poof.
Of yeah, like if you were because I mean there are obviously controversial issues in the church where the church is out of sync with social teaching, but as you said, like it's slow to change. And so sometimes...
And I don't always think that that is a bad thing.
Exactly.
I think that saves you from poor changes, maybe.
Yes. I think a lot of times the role of the Catholic Church in society, because it is, you know, the Pope is such a recognizable figure.
Right.
You know, socially and culturally. And somebody has to have a voice that is saying, hey, maybe we should be doing these... very conservative things, and yet we're not going to punish you if you don't. You know, like
right.
there in the Catholic Church, the great thing is you can always go to confession, and there is always absolution that is offered if you are truly contrite for the things that you have done that you consider to be wrong. So you can go and you can say, this is how I have to make peace with God.
Yeah.
But the church has a very public voice.
Yeah.
So I think if the church were to say, hey, no, it's cool. Everybody can do whatever they want, then it would be one step closer to everybody really actually doing whatever they want, which sometimes is a really bad thing.
And that's not really the role of the church.
Yeah.
Like, the church does have a very specific mission.
Right.
And I think sometimes we disagree on how that mission's implementation ought to look.
For sure.
And that's a more valid disagreement than, like, just be like, do whatever you want. Like, what's the point?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You'd already actually do that if you live somewhere where you're allowed to do what you want.
Exactly.
So whatever.
Or you could just leave the church. You know, the Catholic
right.
Church
that's what I mean.
Not,
like you don't have to.
Yeah. It's not citizenship. And even if it is citizenship, you can always move to another country. You
right.
know, like it's just kind of church is a choice.
Yeah.
You know, like where you belong.
Church is a choice.
But if you could say something that was okay, we're gonna make
so
this change to. It doesn't even necessarily need to be to put the church more in alignment with society, but just to further the mission of the church.
Yeah, I think I've been very reactive lately, and that's unfortunately continuing, everybody, because, like, we see so much heinous stuff in the news with churchy things right now. So there's just been a whole new batch of scandal unearthed.
Right.
And I do think we are cleaning up decades-old messes. And
sure.
there's some old people who need, like, I wish it could all happen at once, but because of this, and I can't help but be reactionary to it, I think the one big change was, I think, a whole, like, section of how the church is run on the ground in countries, in communities, needs to be revamped and turned over to the laity. I actually think it needs to be so transparent and with, I mean, like, you know, in the secular world, like, we have problems with financial institutions or with other institutions and transparency, but we have, like, laws that can combat that. There's a whole different level of supervision, and I think that needs to happen yesterday for the church. And I think it would be really wise to turn that over to a non-clerical association worldwide.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And I'm talking about where people are employed under the church.
Yep.
Completely. Like, you know, vocations is one thing and being assigned somewhere, but I think we need a whole separate governing body that handles the money and that handles the legality and that handles any kind of whiff of crime.
Yeah.
Whatever kind of crime.
Right. Yeah. Well, and so, that is, there has been a movement that I think in some respects did start with Benedict. But certainly has been amplified by Francis to say we need a third party to come in and analyze our financial system, you know, and they had people come in and say, here's, you know, like,
they have done a big rehaul,
but that, like, consultants are different than, like, part of the church structure. So that's, I think, having.
Right. And, you know, they're really committed to this whole pastor, and that just goes up or down the, however you want to see, where they are really in charge and all be all. That's not working for us.
Yeah.
I think they can, I don't think that that's a gospel value that they are entitled to hang on to.
Hmm.
How about you, though? If you got to make a change today, what would you do?
Yeah. Well, I've thought about this a bit since it was my question. And my knee-jerk reaction, I agree with you, you know, like there's a lot of places where the church needs work socially, you know, in terms of how the church approaches and makes a welcoming place for the LGBTQ community in the church. And where the church is headed in terms of, you know, the idea that the whole, that the concept of life and death, and the fact that they preach about this, like, culture of death that we have to avoid, you know, for abortion and euthanasia and things like that. Like, I would love to just see the language and the approach to that change. Maybe the policies don't, but the language, the way that we engage in that dialogue. But I think if we're going to get to that point, the way that we get there is through leadership, and the way that the way that we're going to lead the church needs to change structurally. You know, so the knee-jerk reaction that everybody calls for is, well, we need either or both, you know, women priests and or priests who can marry, right?
Totally.
So the easiest thing to do if you were Pope for a day would be to be, okay, women priests are allowed, or priests can get married, or maybe both, or whatever. But I think in order to facilitate that, both of which I think would be good things in their own right, but there's also a place for the celibate priest who says, this is my life. This community is my family. I'm not going to have my own family. Things like that. So I would create a fourth order. So
a fourth order. Yes.
So you've got,
I like
the,
this.
The three orders are deacon, priest, and bishop, right? And cardinals and even the pope are really just sort of glorified bishops. So you got deacons who can be married. And then but really deacons are basically just like the parish bitch.
They go through so much to get there too.
No real power. And they have to jump through so many hoops, and they are, if you happen to be at a parish where a deacon is assigned, they are really kind of looked at as less than, right?
Well, less than priests.
Yeah.
And I think people still are like, but I wanted the priest to baptize my baby.
Right.
And you're like this person.
They can only perform some sacraments. Yeah. And really, it's written into the code of who they are that they are meant to be servants. So you don't question, why can I not do these things? Like, you are the servant of the parish. And then you got the priest, which is your sort of standard issue. And then you have bishops who have more authority than a priest. Well, I think a fourth order who have all of the power and authority of a priest, but it's open to women, which the diaconate, we're hopefully maybe moving in
we're
a direction
moving that
where
way.
Women,
it could happen.
But give them all the power and authority of a priest, let them be married, let them be women, and maintain the priesthood as an order of celibates.
Yeah.
Where they say, I want to really dedicate my entire life to this.
So that would be the only difference that they have is their celibacy? Or they, like you're saying,
so,
like, the fourth order could do all the sacraments.
I think at
like
that
Eucharist, like we're talking like the big one.
Fourth order gets to do it all.
Okay.
All so right. Essentially what you would have would be kind of like the bishop, the priests would maybe get bumped up between the level of priest and bishop, because bishops are often assigned to so many parishes that they really can't be a presence at that parish.
Yeah.
Whereas a priest maybe could you know, like if you had one priest,
a regional who was
like
fellow,
almost like an auxiliary bishop, you know,
yeah.
could okay. be assigned to a handful of parishes to mm-hmm. really be a presence mm-hmm. there and to guide them and whatever. But all of the authority for that parish was with
yeah.
someone who had committed themselves entirely to the priesthood. Yeah. They didn't have any side jobs. They didn't do anything else, but they were open to having a family, or women were invited into that yeah. order. Then I think it would open the doors to new leadership in the church that would be respected as authority.
Yeah. Guess like you have given this some thought. Yeah. I am impressed.
You want to know where I got the idea?
Yes.
It'll be the second time that we mention Uh-oh. George R. R. Martin in this podcast.
No, I am not giving George R. R. Martin any credit for anything I like ever again. He's gotten all he's getting from me.
Because if you read the books.
Oh, dear. I did read the books. The That's part of the problem.
I know. But the Maesters, they are essentially an order Dudes. Of priests who have chosen to be celibate. Whereas there are other priests who are, that is not required of them within like that whole like worshipers of the seven and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, damn, like, so they go, they get special training. They go to this place. Like they are very well respected because of the life choices that they made, but they're not necessary for the everyday spirituality.
But they are sort of like guiding.
Yeah.
I hate George R. Martin. You know what? Fuck you, George R. R. Martin. I'm still giving guest credit for this because of the women part.
Finish your books.
finish your fucking books. Yeah. Not that it matters anymore. Okay, so when you asked this question, when I drew it, it was the first thing I thought of was women priests
mm-hmm.
or
That's where most people's minds would
And I didn't want to touch it because, I don't know, like, I consider myself a pretty, like, ardent, strident, like, feminist, but... Yes. That's the kind of thing where the church moves slow. And I'm like, I don't, like, I have this whole thing, but, like, not presuming
right.
upon the Spirit, where I'm like, I feel like we have to keep working this out in a prayerful way as people. And I feel like we have the better chance of that with leadership like Francis. And I think that does show kind of the movement of the Spirit. Yeah. And I just, like, I would not be the person to, like, make that sweeping change. But I love your idea of a fourth order, which is yours alone.
I think perhaps the more practical way to do it, you know, because instituting a fourth order would be, like, holy smokes, you know. But, like, really finding practical ways to increase participation in the religious orders for women, you know, like, to because there's going to be a nun... Not just shortage, where we already have a nun shortage. Yep. There's going to be a nun outage very soon. That lifestyle has not been modernized in a way that will attract people continuously.
Right, and we're seeing some going to the throwback style, which
expanding the diaconate to people and maybe reducing the number of hoops that they have to jump through, really opening up the invitation to say, hey, if you want to be a church leader, and then hopefully increasing the amount of respect that the diaconate would have in a parish... To say, hey, no, this is someone who really has authority and who can lead our parish. And it's open to people who are married and it's open to people who are women, because it has been historically that. And we really should come around back to that. But, you know, like that's maybe a more practical way of doing it. But I do think that two sort of separate levels of priesthood, or two orders of priests, where some of them can maintain that sort of traditional celibate role. And the other one is one where it's your day job, you know, might be, you know.
Well, guess is on to something here. Let us know what you think. What would you do if you got to make a change if you were Pope for today?
You got to be Pope Church Drunk Listener for a day.
Yes. Come on, Church Drunkest. We'd like to know.
Hit us up with an email, churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Yep. Or you can tweet at guess at churchdrunkpod.
Yep. Or go check out the blog, send us a comment, do whatever you got to do to get in touch with us.
I'd love to hear from you.
And of course, all that stuff also still applies for any of the books that, you want us to
mention. Yeah, summer reading.
Or what's on your summer reading list?
Next time. I will be taking my turn as the unread, for the Iowa baseball
Confederacy.
Yes. I wanted to say conspiracy. I'm like, wait, it's not conspiracy.
Well, you're not that far off, really. So, Iowa baseball Confederacy by W.P. Kinsella. We're tackling that next week. I've read it. Dizzy has not, so she gets to interview me on Church Drunk,
where we'll make wine out of whatever we
damn well please. Dandelions or roses or elderberries.
Just hopefully not getting poisoned.
Shoe leather. Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Cool. If you can ferment it.
We'll drink it.
We'll drink it. Cheers.
Peace.